I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source. On Saturday, the United States military struck Venezuela and snatched its president and first lady. Nicolas Maduro is now facing drug charges. But the repressive Maduro government is still in place in the socialist South American country. President Trump claims that he's in charge of Venezuela now. Well, what does that mean? By what authority? And will there be elections? Trump also wants Venezuela's oil and other natural resources. Is that what we do now? Take over countries to steal their stuff? What does this mean for the people of Venezuela and stability in the region? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. It's still not clear what the true objective was behind the military attack on Venezuela on Saturday and the rendition of President Nicolas Maduro and his wife Celia Flores. Maduro's government remains in place with his vice president at the head. The only thing that we know for sure is that our president, Donald Trump, wants Venezuela's oil, and he's taking it. But what at what cost? The price could be establishing the United States as a might-makes-right military power that doesn't care about international law and the UN Charter. To help us make sense of these developments, we're joined by Katsu Nikusawa Chavez. He is the director of the Center for International Engagement and the professor of political science at Trinity University. And Katsu, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you.
Also with us is Tara Van Ho, international law expert, now based at St. Mary's University School of Law here in San Antonio. And Tara Van Ho, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Katsu, let me start with you. If you could talk about what you're seeing with the action in the United States. And, you know, I call it the action. You know, it's so vague. We don't know what to call it. So what actually happened?
Yeah, so what actually happened is that the U.S. military was used to enforce a DEA arrest that were charges that were brought against President Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela. And so the military goes in, they shot between 24 and 80 individuals. We would say maybe extrajudicially took the president, captured, kidnapped, sequestered the president and absconded with him back to New York City. And so this is, by all accounts, a big breach in international law. And so we're at a loss, as you say. We do not know what the plan is for Venezuela, and we don't know how this fits in with other issues that the U.S. cares about. And so a lot is up in the air. And it might be that this is by design from the Trump administration.
What design? To cause chaos?
Well, you know, like cause chaos, right? Like if sometimes in chess games, right, bullet chess, you see these moves going on for that are very ponderous, all of a sudden start to move really fast, and a lot of pieces get cleared off the board. It's something that I think we saw in some way with the intervention in Israel, where these very stable actors like Hezbollah and Iran all of a sudden were wiped off the security map, and a new order is starting to emerge. And so is it something like that where the U.S. is trying to create a lot of chaos around the world and trying to take as many advantageous positions as it can? And that's really something that we need to kind of keep following, because this talk about taking over Greenland, the
Cuba.
Panama Canal, Cuba, these are all things that are, one can imagine that these are now in play, right? That the US will reestablish a control over Cuba, Cuba and the Panama Canal. We still have the issue of like this C.K. Hutchinson, for example, that owns the two facilities at both sides of the Panama Canal that are owned wholly by Chinese corporations. And a few years ago, Trump was very upset about this and forced the Chinese to sell these properties to U.S. Companies. And the deal hasn't gone through. It's been off the radar for most of the second administration, but it's a reality, right? There's things like people from reporting from China that China is now walking away from the deal to sell these corporations back to U.S. companies.
All right, so
So a lot of
there's a lot going on there, but that's not what we're hearing from Donald Trump or any of his acolytes. Tara Van Ho, international law, is that over?
I hope not. I hope not because fundamentally, international law has worked not wonderfully, but well to protect American interests and to keep the world somewhat in check from our worst instincts. When you hear Stephen Miller talk about controlling the Venezuelan economy and making sure that they can only export or import based off of what the U.S. wants, that's a form of military occupation. And it's a form that has a really bad history and really bad results for the occupiers throughout history. And so international law was developed largely to keep those bad instincts at bay, and it has worked really quite well to allow for international economic development, for better trade relationships, and fundamentally for a better way of living for most of the world, most of the time.
And hopefully prevent world wars from breaking out.
Yeah, we've done a pretty good job for the past 7 years of not having a true world war. And when you see these kinds of activities taking place, again, Venezuela, Greenland, Cuba, you are compromising long-term alliances. You're compromising long-term stability for really what I consider to be quite short-term gains. We might oust Maduro, we might have some access to oil, but what are we sacrificing, not just now, but 5, 10 years from now? And the sacrifice is a stable economic order, a stable world order.
And so, with the UN Charter, that's all about not doing what we just did, right?
Yes. So under the UN Charter, there's what's called Article 2.4, and it says that you're not allowed to go into a foreign country without that country's permission. So it's aggressive use of force, which is what we just saw. When we talk about what should we call what happened to Maduro, well, under international law, it's a war crime, what we just did. It's not a war crime. It's an act of war, what we just did. And if we're going to take the oil from Venezuela for the benefit of the U.S., that is actually a war crime. And all of that is prohibited under the UN Charter and under international law. The U.S. was part of the process of setting up this world order because we realized that it benefits us short, medium, and long term. And so to see the U.S. work against that now so blatantly is really concerning.
And it benefits us because we have a stable world where trade can flow, deals can be made, alliances can be put in place, democracy is allowed to flourish. People come out of poverty, they buy American goods. That's the benefit.
That's some of the benefit. That international trade actually has allowed for the U.S. to really flourish. And people often confuse international law with something that's not real or not enforceable. But the way it's enforced is through international diplomatic means. And so when you hear about China walking away from the deal to sell control over the Panama Canal, that's a form of enforcing international law. And we can see already that our trade partners are starting to look for other trade partners for replacements to the United States.
And that could have a when does the United States become the pariah of the world for this type of action? We're going to take a break here. Our phone lines are open. We do want to get our listeners involved on this. Do they support what happened? Are they horrified? 833-877-8255. The source continues talking about Venezuela and the U.S. after this.
Need to get rid of your property? Here's a simple solution. Donate it to TPR. Visit tpr.careasy.org/realestatedonation to learn more.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the developments with the United States taking a military action, aggressive approach. We went into Venezuela. We bombed it. We killed approximately 80 people there. Most of them were in the military. Some of them were Cubans. Some of them were Venezuelans. But now the United States says we are running Venezuela. We want their oil. We want their gold. We want other rare earth minerals that might be there. Venezuela has been under a socialist dictatorship for a while now, and the people there have been suffering. And make no bones about it, Nicolas Maduro is a bad man. He was a dictator. He put people in prison. He tortured them for their political beliefs, for what they said on social media. And there were many people in Venezuela who were very happy to see Maduro taken away by the United States, but they were also holding their breath to see what happens next. And we're really still trying to figure that out. Delcy Rodriguez, who is the vice president of the Maduro government, she is now the head of state there. And she ran basically the economy of Venezuela. And it's, you know, not taking her out, not changing the regime, if it was so bad. I mean, she was also elected under a fake election. You know, she's not a legitimate person of state either, any more than Maduro was. So why leave them in place? There's a lot of questions here, but what does this do to the United States? What does this do to the flow of drugs, immigration, people? You know, there's a lot going on here. It's just not a one and done kind of a thing. This also impacts the status of the United States across the world. You can call in, tell us what you see, what you want to see happening. Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go straight to Jose on the line. And Jose, you're on the air.
Hello, and thank you. I just want to express my disgust for what's happening, our actions in Venezuela. But the thing is, Trump is a symptom. He's just doing things blatantly out in the open. But this has been going on with Venezuela for decades. We've had attempted coups. Even the vice president's father was tortured by the CIA. All right, we've had a long-standing embargo against Venezuela. This is one presidential administration after the other. And what we see now is that due to our neglect in the Americas, since we can't accomplish all of our goals in the Middle East, we're focusing here. We're coming to the easy patsy. We're flexing our muscles where we can have these quick and easy scores, quick and easy victories. I also take issue with the characterization of Maduro being a dictator and a bad man. Compared to who? Compared to what other dictators that we've backed for decades and who are more vile and more oppressive to their populations? I take issue with that. I think he's a great man. You know, and he's just right now he's taking a hit for Venezuelans, and we should all be cognizant of this.
All right. Well, thank you, Jose, for that observation, that take. So, Tara Van Ho, you know, Maduro, is he a good guy?
No, Maduro is a bad guy in the sense that he was an extraordinarily oppressive leader. He's engaged in torture and extrajudicial killings. And he wasn't democratically elected. The fact that he's a bad man, I think Jose's right. He's not any worse than several of the other bad men in the world that we have supported. that doesn't make supporting him right. But it also doesn't mean that we can overthrow him without consequence or without consideration for international law. Legal processes matter. If the government can decide on a Friday that we're not going to care about the process of how we remove Maduro, then on Saturday they can decide that they're not going to care about the process of how you're arrested or tried for crimes. Maduro was, even though he was not elected, he is what's considered the head of state under international law. Under international law, only Venezuela gets to decide who is entitled to head of state immunity for Venezuela. And so by arresting him, we've actually breached and continue to breach Venezuela's sovereignty, even if we've pulled back troops, even if we're not actively boots on the ground in Venezuela. We are breaching Venezuela's sovereignty by arresting him and trying him in U.S. courts.
Quetzal Nicasagua Chavez, can we just skip ahead to the part where Maduro gives Trump a $1 billion bribe and he gets pardoned?
Yeah, you know, something like that happened maybe a few months ago with the case of John Orlando Hernandez, former president of Honduras, who, you know, was very likely involved in drug trafficking. He was convicted in a U.S. court of it in 2024 and recently pardoned by President Trump. And so this is a really interesting question, right? If the reason we are intervening in Venezuela is because of drugs and, you know, the fentanyl crisis and the extraordinary number of people who are dying in the U.S. because of fentanyl overdose, then, you know, like if that's true, the source of fentanyl coming to the U.S. is not Venezuela. Reports indicate that Venezuela has been, involved in the drug traffic. It's not a big player, but most of its cocaine that it does export goes mostly to Europe. That's the kind of belief of that. So it's incongruent, the actions, with what the U.S. president is saying, right? So this is not a war on drugs. The president doesn't care about the war on drugs. This is clear by the pardon on former President Hernandez. This is clear on the how he manipulates the relationship between fentanyl and Venezuela, which there's either he doesn't understand how it works or he's on purposely conflagrating these two
topics. But he calls him a narco-terrorist. The word narco-terrorist is using a lot these days. What is a narco-terrorist, Quetzal?
Narco-terrorist is a person disliked by the U.S. government, right? Like it's a catch-all phrase that that President Trump can bandy around. It doesn't have a definition. Other than the person designated as a narco-terrorist is somebody disliked by President Trump.
Well, I mean, it's got to mean something. Tara Van Hoe, give me some sort of definition?
So I think what you're hearing is that narco-terrorism isn't a real definition. So the U.S. is conflating what we have long described as terrorism, which is physical violence against a population for the purpose of persuading them to do something that they didn't want to do in the first place. So that's traditionally how we've understood terrorism. And now we're hearing this notion of narco-terrorism, which is building off of this notion of violence against the civilian population, but adding into it violence through the sale or transport or export of drugs. Now, what's really interesting is publicly the Trump administration is saying this is about fentanyl. And that evokes a really strong emotional sentiment within the United States. We have seen a huge opioid crisis. We know what's problematic about opioids. So people are resistant or are willing to go after someone who's responsible for fentanyl. But in the indictment of Maduro, fentanyl isn't the crime that they're pointing to. It's not the drug that they're pointing to. They're pointing to cocaine. So you've already seen the U.S. government change its narrative around this, between what Trump is saying publicly, which is to evoke emotional outrage by the American public, this dismissiveness of Maduro as, of course, we need to get rid of him. And then behind the judicial wall, they're saying actually it has nothing to do with fentanyl. It's now we're going after him for cocaine and also for violations of a 1934 arms law about importing and exporting arms to the United States. So you have already seen this walking back of what are we talking about within this war on drugs against Maduro.
But when I hear, Tara, them using the term narco-terrorist, and they, you know, I hear it all the time from people in the administration and senators like Lindsey Graham, who are supporting Trump in this action. He's giddy with his support for Trump on this. Saying he's a narco-terrorist, and that's why we had to do what we had to do. But I still don't know what they mean by that. Was he using? Was he a terrorist? You know, is Maduro a terrorist?
That's not the allegation that the government is making to the court.
But they're making it to the public, and you know, we need to figure out if that's just hot air.
Yes, I think it is hot air. Unfortunately, I think what they're saying when they talk about narco-terrorism is they're trying to make the drug war something into a violent on the ground war that Americans are at risk of something similar to 9/11, and that's simply not what's happening. There is violence within the drug war. There is violence within the drug trade. But this notion of narco-terrorism where you're somehow persuading the civilian population or attacking the civilian population by supplying drugs, it's not the same thing as traditional terrorism. But you also don't have a clear definition from the White House, from Lindsey Graham, or from the administration. They're using it because it's an evocative word, not because it's a word that has true meaning to it.
Okay, so but, I mean, would it apply to some of these drug cartels that have taken over states in Mexico or cities in Mexico who are definitely upsetting the government there? Those are narco-terrorists?
Probably under the Trump administration, those would be.
Well, even in an objective, non-politicized view.
I don't think that that's a real term. So I don't think that you can call them narco-terrorists. They're definitely drug lords. They're definitely cartels. They're criminals. But when you talk about terrorism, you're really looking at this. You should be looking at something that is about a violent attack on a civilian population for political purposes. You're trying to change the political views of a civilian population. And that's not what's happening within the drug trade.
Katso, you wanted to jump in on that?
Yeah, I totally agree with Tara about this. The definition of terrorism, as Tara was saying, has to do with the use of violence for political purposes. And the purposes of drug trafficking is to make more money. And I'm trying to think about cartels using violence for political purposes. There might be a few instances around elections in Mexico and the assassination of different candidates and of elected officials. And that's as close as it comes to kind of this idea of terrorism. But the end goal of these organizations is not political change. It is for them to make more money.
And so Maduro, though, he's accused of being part of a cartel, Cartel del Sol. Is that a real thing, Katso?
I don't have any expertise in Cartel del Sol, so I would maybe Tara has some knowledge on this.
So this is a newer accusation, and my understanding is that's actually a slang term within Venezuela for corruption within the military. So it's not an actual organized cartel. It's not an actual organized criminal group. It's the slang term. It would be similar to if in the United States we came up with something
like
for
a vast right wing conspiracy, you know, like it's a thing, but Weider's not a real thing.
That's exactly a good analogy for this. That's exactly it.
And so, but it is part of the accusation. I think it is in the indictment, Tara.
It is, but it's not an actual term. So I think this goes to the problem that the administration is going to face when they go into the courts, is they've done a lot around sort of sense and feeling findings rather than fact finding.
And so it's a vibe.
It's a vibe over what's going on in Venezuela, and it's a vibe about Maduro. And that works well if all you have to do is press conferences. It's going to be really hard to prove in a court of law.
Well, you know, Manuel Noriega of Panama, people like to make that comparison, and he was brought up on drug charges in the United States. And many of those charges he was acquitted on. So that's probably something that we could at least anticipate happening here, because when you get into the courtroom, facts do matter. We got to take a break here. We're going to get Henrietta on the air. We've got some other callers who want to jump in on this. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Bill, we'll get you on the air after Henrietta. Well, what do you think, folks? Should the United States be a might makes right kind of a country now where we just take what we want? You know, we have Stephen Miller in the White House saying that the rule of law doesn't matter anymore. International law doesn't matter anymore. We can go after Greenland. We can go after Cuba. We can do whatever we want because no one's going to stop us. Is that who we are now? 833-877-8255. The Source continues after this.
Have a property past its prime? Consider donating it to Texas Public Radio. It's hassle-free, and you may qualify for a tax write-off, too. Learn more at tpr.careasy.org/realestatedonation.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Venezuela, what's happening with the United States taking this aggressive military action, bombing, killing people in Venezuela in order to snatch away its president, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife, Celia Flores. And the government remains. Even though Maduro is in a jail in New York City, Venezuela's government remains, and they're continuing their crackdown. They are still going through food shortages. The food shortages have gotten even worse. People are confused or upset, but they're happy to see Maduro go and maybe face some form of justice. But what's going to happen to their lives day to day? These are people, about 38 million people, who are just struggling to survive. The number is 833-877-8255. Let's go to Henrietta. And Henrietta, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm not a huge fan of either Trump or Maduro. My God, what is this country coming to? Let me tell you, Trump is just getting started. He is just getting started, and he's like running to the finish line to hurry up and see what else he can get for himself, but because it's not for this country. Seriously, what can we do to stop him? Nobody wants to stop him, you know. It's just like we're looking the other way, and I don't think it's fair to myself. I love my country.
All right, Henrietta.
And it hurts me because he's done the same. I'm sure we don't know of everything that he's capable of, that he has done to other human beings or other Americans here or minorities.
Uh-huh. Henrietta, thank you for your call. Appreciate that. So the concern that he's just getting started. Tara Van Ho, PhD, international law expert at St. Mary's School of Law in San Antonio. If Trump doesn't really face any serious consequences, do you see that? You think that this will? Why not? Why stop?
I mean, that is the concern. He's already made it clear. He thinks that Venezuela was a great success. Now, we also haven't gotten very far into this occupation of Venezuela, and I don't think he really understands the long-term consequences of what he's done. But if he keeps going, how does he think this is going to work? The U.S. military can do stuff, but occupying Venezuela, Cuba, and Greenland all at the same time, that's a lot to put on the military. It's a very unfair burden to ask of the military, particularly when we also have to be supporting Israel, when we are also have to be in other areas of the world. So this idea that we're just going to keep going after little bits and little wins, it stretches our resources and it puts an unfair burden on the taxpayers. I know he thinks that the oil is going to pay for this occupation of Venezuela, but we heard that already in 2003, and it wasn't the oil companies paying for our occupation of Iraq. It was the American taxpayers, and we're already hurting economically. This is going to make it a lot worse.
Let's talk about oil for a second. Katso Nikasawa Chavez, a director of the Center of International Engagement and a professor of political science at Trinity University. Oil, right now it's about $57 a barrel, maybe $59 a barrel, depending on which day you're looking at it these days. That's low for oil. It's going to take years to get additional oil out of Venezuela. So they're saying there's an oil glut. And also, if you look at where technology is headed, we're moving towards basically a post-oil world. Oil is not the thing it used to be. Is that really what we're after here?
It looks like that. That's the reason why, right? Like President Trump was very adamant when he gave his briefing on Saturday that the reason for the invasion was our oil, right? Like that was very interesting that he referred to it as the U.S.'s oil, that it belongs to the U.S. because the U.S. developed it. And yeah, you know, like
and if that's true, that doesn't make any sense. We really don't need Venezuela's oil.
Well, you know, a lot of the worldviews of our president, right, with tariffs and other things, harken back to a different time. You know, in a broad stroke, it seems that we're moving away from a win-win situation where the international community can use the freedom of the oceans to travel and have commerce around the world, and where everybody can become rich. In theory, not everybody, but you know, in practice, not everybody. In theory, everybody could get rich. We're moving now to a kind of zero-sum mentality where the things that we don't control are potentially controlled by our adversaries, and we need to put our fingerprints around on these.
Our adversaries being China, maybe trying to just this is
China.
People are saying if we're thinking, you know, three-dimensional chess here, that this is really about China. Yeah. All right, let me go to another caller. Let's go to Bill. Okay. And Bill, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts real fast. You know, in regards to these drug dealers and drug lords, Maduro and such, being terrorists, they do terrorize the population. And it happens in Mexico, too, when they cut off people's heads, hang their bodies from the expressways or bridges and stuff like that. That is terroristic. You can't deny it. Whether it's for gain or not politically is irrelevant. It is terroristic. Number two, in regards to the oil, there is already a glut of oil. U.S. is a major oil producer right now, but you can't escape the fact that Russia and China are tied to Ukraine. Okay. And one of the ways you can also start to dismantle or start to achieve a peaceful resolution is by denying the oil to China and also denying the transport of these tankers to other sanctioned companies or countries. So, you know, we can look at it one-dimensionally, but there's a lot more going on behind the scene. Am I happy that Maduro's gone? Yeah, because whether it's Coke, and Coke's a bad deal, that kills people. You can't deny it. Or fentanyl, I don't care. If he was a dealer, if they were sending massive amounts of Coke into this country, yeah, he should be captured and prosecuted.
What about the Honduran president that was given the pardon? Does that bother you at all?
It bothers the hell out of me, and I don't know why. But I'm not in that room, nor were you. I don't know. Okay, I really don't know exactly why that was done, and that upsets me. Was it done to, you know, set the table for something else happening in Central America? I have zero idea on the thing. Was it done for bribery? Unknown. I assume and hope those facts will come out. But yes, that bugs me. But just because that's happening doesn't negate the fact that Maduro and company were complacent, at least per the charge. Okay.
Well, he was an active participant. He wasn't complacent. He ran the show. I don't doubt that.
Well, I don't know if Maduro, I don't know. I don't, but it has to come out in court. I understand what you're saying, but we can say he did, he didn't. But until it's like proven in court, I can't say he did it.
But Hernandez was, he was convicted. The Honduran president was convicted in court.
Then the question remains as to why. Why? And yes, of course, that bothers the hell out of me. Pardon my French.
That's cool.
You know, but it ain't right. Don't get me wrong on that thing. That ain't right. Two wrongs don't make a right. You know, but I don't know what's at play on that. I don't know if anyone knows, can tell you. Factually, what is at play? Unknown.
All right.
But
well,
the fact
you.
Remains,
yeah,
you know,
ahead.
That we're getting a lot of drugs out of Central America. Okay.
Well, they're coming from Colombia. That's also a place
Colombia,
where Trump is talking about. and they're coming out of Ecuador, and they're coming out of Venezuela. Venezuela goes to Europe. That's where almost all of their drugs go, to Europe, not to the United States. Some come into here.
And
they
Mexico.
Come up through Mexico. And, you know, and we have the precursor chemicals for fentanyl coming from China. Some of that's being manufactured in the United States. I'd say about 40% of it's being manufactured in the United States. The rest of it's coming up from Mexico.
Yep. You know, I mean, at a certain point in time, what's been done in the past isn't working. It's not working. You can't compete with the dollars. So sometimes you got to take a different approach, which is maybe doing what happened in, you know, Venezuela. You know, that's what I see it, because we've been dealing with this drug scourge for too long with no resolution.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your feedback there, Bill. Thanks for calling in. Get your what are you hearing there, Katso Nikasawa Chavez?
Yeah, so this is really interesting, right? The why are we doing this, and if it's not oil, if it's oil because we need to kind of slow down China, Venezuela doesn't export that much oil to China. From the Venezuelan perspective, China was its biggest buyer, but from the Chinese perspective, it was a percentages of 1 or 2% of its oil. If we want to blockade Chinese oil, it's the Strait of Malacca, right? Like, that's where we would want to. And we have already a presence in Diego Garcia, and we have great allies in the Singaporeans. And so, like, if we wanted to turn off the oil for China, you know, it is in Southeast Asia. This is not the oil it survives on. And so it's like that argument about the three-dimensional chess is kind of worrisome. It also, there's an implication here about international law, in the sense that if we are going to move away from the order that we established after World War II, that we would be entering going back to a pre-World War II scenario or pre-World War I scenario, where right makes
right. If you want Poland, right, you go get Poland.
Yeah, would China now invade Taiwan under the pretense of some sort of illegal action by the current?
They don't need a precursor. President. They don't need an excuse. Yeah. They just want it. So yeah.
Yeah. So now we're in a system, right? Is it that we're going to be back in a system that's pre-1918, and we're going to go to everybody who wants anything?
You know, under the Don Rowe doctrine, maybe. Okay. We got to take a break here. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Susie and Randall, hang on. We'll get you on the air, and you can have your say when we come back from this one-minute break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
A donation comes in many forms: a sustaining membership, a one-time gift, even a home, land, or commercial property. Donating property is a great way to give back, and you may even claim a tax deduction. Get the process started today. Call 844-277-HOME or visit tpr.careasy.org/real-estate-donation.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Conversations about Venezuela, the United States. Why did we go there? What are we doing there? What's the future look like? Let's go to our caller, Susie. And Susie, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you. I feel like too many people have Trump's ear, and they're encouraging this action because to enrich themselves, like Sitko. Had some major, they bought or have invested majorly in Venezuela recently, and apparently have been talking to Trump to get support from him for their work in, or their future work in Venezuela. But I think before all that, Putin was talking to Trump in the first administration, Trump's first administration. Putin and Trump apparently have been having discussions about carving up the world into areas of influence. Trump and his folks just sent out a plan a few weeks ago for how the United States is going to operate, and it's backing away from Europe and NATO and wanting to, you know, secure more power within North and South America, yeah. leaving Putin more freedom in Europe and Ukraine, and leading China in their zones of influence, including Taiwan. Okay.
So carving up the world. Susie, thank you for that. So Tara Van Ho, so is that the Don Rowe doctrine, really? So basically we have a, you know, the Maduro government was basically a criminal enterprise with the way they were extracting gold and using that to help keep the government propped up and selling oil and doing all other kind of criminal acts. And now, you know, Trump wants that criminal enterprise. He wants it to be part of his criminal enterprise. Is that the Don Rowe doctrine?
There is a level to which it seems like the Don Rowe doctrine is this expansive, more violent, more imperialistic approach to the Monroe Doctrine, where we're going to carve up the world into spheres of influence. We'll give Russia Europe and we'll take Latin America. The problem with that is that it's really short-sighted and seems a little confused with Trump's other economic agendas. So the administration has also said we want to be AI leaders. Well, if we give up our presence in Asia and our protection of Europe, we also end up sacrificing our leadership in AI. We talked about, is this about the oil? I actually think it's a little bit about the oil, but also a lot about what we know as rare earth minerals, which are the minerals like gold and copper that are necessary
like
for
palladium,
developing
things like that.
Exactly. Things that are necessary for developing AI chips. And Venezuela in 2023 disclosed that they are very rich in rare earth minerals. And so I think the oil is the language that people understand, but what he's actually really going for is the rare earth minerals. But if you sacrifice Taiwan for that, you sacrifice our ability to be present in Asia or our ability to protect places like Ukraine, which is also dominant in rare earth minerals. We're sacrificing a lot for what doesn't seem like a good deal for the American public.
There's a caller, Randall. Randall, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Wow. So they're carving up the world now, huh? Gives a whole new meaning to the phrase, the five families. I know David gets that reference.
Yeah, from
your
office.
Earlier caller. No.
I know what you mean.
Okay. All right. Anyway, your earlier caller, Henrietta, was correct. These people are just getting started. Monday, during an interview with Jake Tapper on CNN, Trump administration aide Stephen Miller said, and this is a direct quote, nobody's going to fight the United States militarily over the future of Greenland. We live in a world, in the real world, that is governed by strength, that is governed by force, that is governed by power. These are the iron laws of the world since the beginning of time. Miller said that right out on CNN in front of everybody. And your guest, I'm sorry, ma'am, I don't remember your name. She's right, too. These autocrats, they want the modern-day equivalent of putting our military in Korea, Vietnam, and Afghanistan simultaneously. And they somehow expect us to have the human resources left over to secure the border and guard our homeland against potential dangers. It's insanity.
Thank you so much, Randall. I want to make a point about Greenland is that, you know, Greenland is semi-autonomous, nation overseen by Denmark, part of NATO. Denmark has never denied the United States anything in Greenland in terms of putting up military bases, observation posts, whatever we want in Greenland. We've always had full and total cooperation from Denmark on that. We don't need to invade and occupy and steal Greenland in order to achieve the goals of national security. But Katso Nikasawa Chavez, if you can talk about, like, how would the dominoes fall if we did go into Greenland and we seized it, what would that mean? It would mean the end of NATO, they say.
Yes, right. Like right now we have France and leading the Europeans to kind of mount a response to these threats from the U.S.
But no one could stop us. No one would stop us.
You know, I think
they don't have nukes in Greenland.
Well, Dr. Van Horn makes a great point, right? Like there is no forethought for what's going to happen later. We're just reacting and we're playing, mid-court tennis, right? Like it's a very dangerous place where we are because mm-hmm. we would be opening the door to a lot of unknowns. The U.S. spent a lot of its resources and a lot of the advantage that it gained after World War II in establishing this order. And this argument about spheres of influence is very disconcerting in the sense that the U.S. has established itself as the dominant superpower on the planet, and to give up, right, for nothing, all this ability to project its goodwill and its power around the world and get things in return that benefit the U.S. citizens, now are going to be in question, right? We're looking at a world that is closer to this kind of state of nature described by Hobbes, and it's not going to be a fun place, right?
It'll be poorer. Yeah. It'll be more repressive. There'll be less freedom. Yeah. You know, for Americans included. I want to go to another caller. This is our last caller. Let's go to Bart. And Bart, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to comment that, you know, I know the wine and cheese crowd and the pearl clutchers are acting as if this was the first act of, you know, American intervention in South America. As we know, Panama, right, in the early 80s had the paratroopers for about 2 weeks, 27,000 paratroopers dropped in and removed a dictator, you know. This is something that's expected. It's our backyard. We need to be the superpower. We need to flex our muscle, and we need to make sure that we're protecting our interest in our sphere of influence. If we don't intercede, you can guarantee that Russia or China are going to be doing the same thing through their equivalent CIA branches. Thank you, and have a good day.
All right. Well, when we went into Panama, strongman Noriega, we captured him. There had been an election which was fraudulent. He wasn't on the ballot. He was a strongman. He wasn't, the head of state. And the party that won was fraudulent. And when we went in 2 weeks later, we swore in the people who actually won that election. And so we were there to defend democracy. We're not doing that now. But I want to get your reaction to that, Tara Van Ho.
Yeah, I would say that it is unexpected. And how we talk about what we just did also matters. So this isn't the first time that the U.S. has intervened in Latin America. It's not the first time we've removed a dictator. But what we're saying about what we're doing, that is unprecedented. We haven't in the past said, yes, of course we can do this because might makes right. And also, we very clearly want the oil. Even with Iraq in 2003 or Iraq in 1991, the press conferences from the White House didn't suggest that this was just about pillaging someone else's natural resources. And here we're seeing that. We're seeing a sense of, we want this, so we're going to go after it. And it makes us sound childish to the rest of the world. Currently, the Trump administration sounds like a child who sees other people with shiny objects and wants those shiny objects and thinks he can just bully them. Well, anyone who's survived past seventh grade knows that at some point, bullies lose, right? They lose their status. They lose their favor. And it might not be right away. It's true that it's unlikely that we will be militarily fought over Greenland, but we will sacrifice NATO, and that was important.
Well, what about our own selves? What about our sense of identity? I don't want to be part of a country like that. I don't want to be, supporting a country that is the bad bully in the world. Okay, I've got to give you the last word here. We've got about a minute and a half. Katsu Nikasawa Chavez.
I think the issue of the past invasions of Latin America is very true. What Dr. Van Horn is saying, there's been about 41 successful interventions in Latin America to depose or take down regimes, but most of them after World War II, we did the kind of work to make it an excuse for this. Maybe it was that we wanted a dictator out or somebody that was increasing minimum wage for workers. We wanted that person out of power. But we would make excuses. We would pretend that it was there was a legitimate issue of national security for the U.S. So now we're entering this new phase. Are we going to go back? Is it going to be something similar to what happened after Grenada?
Will we allow
Panama?
I mean, we are a democracy still. I mean, do the people have a choice?
Yeah, that's a great point, right? Like, if you don't like this, if you don't identify as this, as you know, you don't want to be American in this kind of way, we have the power to change this when we get our opportunity to vote in the next elections.
I know that Bart said we're part of the wine and cheese crowd. I'm more of a part of the bean and cheese crowd. But, you know, we're the ones who really should say what's happening in this country. Thank you both, Katsuo Nakasawa Chavez, Tara Van Ho. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.